Hi, it's Truth About Markets with Max and Stacey on Resonance 104.4. We're in Amsterdam. This is our home away from home. Could be our home as home soon, Stacey, because this is part of I'm eating some bread, by the way. I might be choking in case there's a choking sound. How you doing, Stacey?
Is eating bread a euphemism for smoking dope or something in this town? You know, you never know. We're in Amsterdam.
It's totally legal here. You can smoke your weight in dope. It's fine. We're here with Matteo, who's got a company he started here. He's a startup wizard, and the company's called Start Chat. Say hello, Matteo.
Hi, Max and Stacey. How are you?
The guy's a superstar. He's a rising star. He's got this incredible app that's sweeping the world. He's raising money on Bank of the Future. He's exceeded his goal within 2 or 3 days because the people realize that it's time for this app to sweep the world, and it's all happening. Right, Stacey?
Max is like staring wildly. Yeah, we've been in Amsterdam for the last few days. I blew up an Italian coffee maker.
let me get that.
There's a new supply. There's a new bowl arriving of some bong. Oh, look at that giant bong. Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. It's actually coffee.
Yeah, thank you.
Actually coffee. And so we are here in Amsterdam where the living is quite good. You know what? We were talking about ABN AMRO on our podcast, or no, on our Kaiser Report. And they're owned by the state, right? So did they fail? ABN AMRO? Did the bank ABN AMRO fail and the state took them over?
They didn't fail. What they have is a huge lawsuit placed, about $2 billion placed on them. Which they had to announce since they're going to again go and sell the shares that the government has on the stock exchange. They have a pretty serious claim by Vestia, which is the largest social housing foundation in the Netherlands. And it seems they sold them a bunch of those poisonous mortgage derivatives. And Vestia now wants its money back. It almost went bankrupt. So that's a pretty serious claim. There's a smaller claim as well. I didn't read about that. It's from Norwegians and Italians. But ABN AMRO has a serious problem with Vestia. $2 billion is no joke.
They're selling the stock on the stock exchange?
They're going to.
Is it going to be at a level at the same as what they bought it for?
The government is going to take a huge hit.
Oh, right now, loss. Like RBS.
They're going to take a huge hit. Billions. The government bailed them out. The government wants its money back, but it doesn't seem as if the market is going to give the government what they paid for saving ABN.
Right. They're ungrateful. The market is ungrateful for that. You never get the money back. They never get the money back, do they, Max?
Well, it was clear from the beginning that the bailout would be uneconomic and that it would result in huge losses. They didn't take the losses immediately because that would have said, oh, you know what, there's a huge loss. Let's put people in jail. So they deferred the loss, like they deferred prosecution. Everything is deferred.
They deferred the loss onto the taxpayer.
Yes, so
the
justice is deferred if you are committing crimes in this group of folks, whereas if you're on the street and you commit a crime, a low-level crime, justice is not deferred. It's impacted immediately. You know, they can't wait to throw you in jail. But if you're of a certain class, they can't wait. They just defer.
So the fact is, though, it seems like investors are unwilling to take 30-40% haircuts on that day, because that's what would have happened had the government not stepped in. But taxpayers seem fine if you spread it out over 10 years. If it's slowly, like you take. You sell it, you know, 8 years, 9 years later.
Right, and how can you do that? Because you're enabled by lower interest rates.
Yeah.
You can always repackage and defer out into the future at a lower rate. But, you know, the era of 30-year bull market in bonds is coming to a close. And rates are starting to move higher. So the ability to cover the fraud in this way is finishing, coming to the end.
What's the name of that cookie that Max is eating? Is that one of the Stokum Faku
Fufla?
It's
bread. It's
dark bread. I thought it was one of those.
The cookie he was eating was the stroopwafel, which is very Dutch. And I think he ate the whole pack last night.
I ate the whole freaking pack of stroopwafel.
Stop it.
Stroopwafel? The stroopwafels are good. It's genuine Dutch cuisine. Oh, and then we went to another place called Momo. Oh, my God. They had some great stuff there.
Oysters.
Oysters. I never had oysters like that. They were transcendental. I was transformed into a mermaid.
And so the last week we did our show, and then it was like the next night. We also did our show. Last week we did our show from Rotterdam. This week we're doing it from Amsterdam. Mm. But last week we missed. Yeah. Last week we missed the serial killer cafe situation. That happened while we were out of town. Lord knows what's happening over in that area this weekend. But so this is a group called Class War. There's a new group in the UK called Class War. And they attacked this cafe called Serial Killer Cafe. What they do is they... I know they're laughing here. I don't know if it's because they've smoked some pot first and they've got the giggles or it's just... anyway, so it sells basically American-style cereal. It doesn't sell that horrible British cereal like Weetabix. It sells the chemical-laden, the sugar-laden, the really sweet American stuff, Fruit Loops, Cap'n Crunch, Cocoa Puffs, all that stuff.
Yes.
And for like 5-6 pounds, so like €9 a bowl. But a lot of, people are seeing this as, I guess there's a lot of gentrification going on. This is the area that is packed with council housing you're allowed to buy your council housing if you want. But it's more of a deprived area historically, but now it's becoming one of the most expensive areas in the UK,
right,
in London. Just like Williamsburg,
not to meet Cocoa Puffs.
When Max was living in Manhattan,
yeah.
Brooklyn was still like a horrible place where it was just poor people. So but Williamsburg is now more expensive than Manhattan, and just like Shoreditch area is.
Well, these are the children of the beneficiaries of quantitative easing.
Yeah.
Especially in East London and in Shoreditch, they're rubbing it into the face of the people that actually live there for generations, that they can spend $8 or $9 on a worthless bowl of worthless American cereal. So. We made the comparison earlier about the Bullington Club, where to get into the Bullington Club, if you're at Oxford and you're part of the TOF set, you have to burn a 50-pound note in the face of a poor person. So this is the equivalent here in 2015. By eating a bowl of cereal and spending this incredible amount, you're basically burning money in front of the poor people to let them know that they're poor. And it is class war, and it's accurately called class war. And class war is bubbling up, and it's getting more, I think, to be a factor, don't you think?
Well, it seems to me that people no longer know what to do with capital anymore because it's so fake, it's so generated, so printed at the push of a button that, 50, 60 years ago, if somebody had access to capital, they would invest in a business, they would create a business, they would hire people, they would create a new thing that some people needed, whether it was like an automobile or a computer, like Steve Jobs and his garage. Now people, they have this capital, the free gains from, property speculation or being lucky enough to be in the property market when Margaret Thatcher handed it over. But they have this capital and they don't even know what to do with it. It's just like a pointless momentary moment in history, a bowl of cereal. And when these guys were being attacked, actually, they did say, we're not your problem. We're not the reason why you're being driven out of this area. We're just trying to offer, give a space for people to enjoy their cereal experience, which seems like, to me, like an existential sort of crisis moment that we're like, is this the sum total of our human history to experience cereal in peace?
Well, the distribution of capital, under a capitalist system would go along lines where it's immaterial how close you are to the origination of that capital. It does. In other words, if you put a high-frequency trading computer server next to the New York Stock Exchange and you're extracting capital because you happen to have a computer that's sucking capital out of the exchange by proximity to the exchange, you're defeating the entire purpose of capitalism. And, going back 1,000, 5,000 years, those who had access to the waterfront would be beneficiaries of an economic, of an agrarian society that needed water to irrigate crops. So if you had regulate and had access to water, you would be a rentier and you would be benefiting from access to that water. Capitalism is supposed to be, well, it will create an abstraction called money, and then we'll distribute it in a way where it's a meritocracy. Those who are creating wealth will have access to capital. Those who are have access and then destroying, creating horrible companies, they go bankrupt. But that's now no longer the case. Bankruptcy is no longer a reason to lose money. In fact, bankruptcy is a reason to get bailed out three or four or five times. ABN AMRO should have gone bankrupt because they are a bad actor. They don't know how to handle the capital. But instead, they were rewarded by copious quantities of capital, the worst that they did. So it's an invalidation of the entire idea of a capitalist post-agricultural-based society. And now we're heading back to pure geolocation consideration and resulting in turf war. So you have actual, just go back to the mobs fighting each other because you have access in a physical space. And unfortunately, there's nothing on the horizon that is going to stop this from becoming worse. And so countries around the world are now at war because of the failure of the engineers and the politicians to maintain a fair distribution.
And it also, this arbitrary nature of where the capital is going also, you know, this continues on in the UK, is this Margaret Thatcher introduced this notion where, you know, you have public housing. And she said, whoever happens to be living in that place that the taxpayer allocated this property to you for low rent, whoever happens to be living there, you can buy that property for 30% discount. The market says it's worth $100,000. You can buy it for $70,000.
Well, let's talk about StartChat for a second, because here you have an app that makes, you can send money all over the world instantaneously, crypto money, StartCoin, Bitcoin, etc. So you don't need to be, you know, anywhere near the physical location of where the money is being originated, because it's not being originated in any one location, unlike quantitative easing, which comes from one location or a few central banks. So because it's a distributed money creation cryptocurrency, it brings back to economics and capitalism the idea of a meritocracy, where those who are bringing ideas that are growing society at large end up, you know, having access to capital. So that's what generates their growth. So so this is a great project, and this is why cryptocurrency is reviled by the banks like RBS or ABN AMRO, because it's directly competing with their flawed model. That's why they hate it. That's why they don't like it, because it puts them out of business. And because of entrepreneurs like Matteo and others, you know, they're doing battle with this entrenched kleptocracy. And, you know, need to support.
Do you feel like you're doing a battle with the entrenched oligopolies and cartels in the banking system?
Well, we basically been excluded already. So the only means of raising funds and doing this was by doing it with the online economy that Max Kaiser and Simon Dixon created with StartJoin, doing our first seeding round, seeing if the community would like the idea, getting a little backing with that one. And then after graduating and doing a proof of concept, showing that we can make the app and make it work and that we're serious about it, and then raise some funds on Bank to the Future in return for equity. Mm. And basically helping the people by having a currency like Bitcoin and StartCoin, which you could send globally to anybody without having to ask permission for the banks or anything else. Peer-to-peer, decentralized, without any point of weakness.
Now, we are in the Netherlands, and ABN AMRO came out this week, well, on Friday, the head of innovation, or was it Thursday? He said that ABN AMRO wants to use the blockchain, not Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's used for money laundering and drugs. What do you say?
I would say they would have to exclude the U.S. dollar, because that would be the number one currency used for fraud and everything else in the world right now. Yeah. So that's
Do you think so, Max?
Well, this is interesting because the big banks now recognize that blockchain technology can reduce their costs by 99% in transmitting funds. So they want to use it because they want to, you know, glean that savings and boost their own personal pay. They're not going to pass the savings on to customers. But, you know, what they're talking about a centralized blockchain, I think, is a good way to put it. Yeah. And this, I think, at some point, the community at large around the world will realize, you know what, actually there's something that exists called, it's a decentralized blockchain, and that's where I'm going to go put my money. It's called Bitcoin. So I think that this will, we have a dalliance with these centralized blockchains, like a Ripple is another one. And I think that this is just going to, the pendulum is going to swing in the other direction at some point and say, wait a minute. Yeah, they recognize the blockchain. You know, a year ago they were saying the blockchain is voodoo, and Charlie Munger at over there at Berkshire Hathaway was calling it rat poison. Now they're embracing it like it's mother's milk, except they don't want to actually participate in a way that is mutually beneficial for all participants. They just want to steal the benefits, as they always do. So maybe we should just go back to the mother coin, Bitcoin. And so I think, you know, the adoption of Bitcoin will continue, and the price probably will start to trend higher again.
But yeah, and it's Bitcoin itself which provides the security for the blockchain. So they want to, if they wanted that, that's like you know, you lose all the security of the blockchain by getting rid of extracting the Bitcoin from it.
Well, the good thing with Bitcoin is you can preserve your wealth and hold the private keys yourself, and basically not having to trust the banks or anybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the miners, though? So they want to have a blockchain without miners, without not distributed but centralized on one server somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the miners, you know, guarantee the distribution of the chain and the robustness and the security of it. And so this is why, I mean, to segue into another issue that is talked about in the last couple of weeks are the block size issue, which directly impacts miners, because miners, of course, they get paid to secure the network by every 10 minutes being issued Bitcoin. And so they are, you know, part of that discussion, part of that dialogue. You know, and I don't see any miners having put out a public press release saying we are now leaving the mining business. Have you seen anyone quit the mining business because of the block size controversy?
Over the block size controversy, no. But I have seen some shut down because of the price of Bitcoin, that they're losing money now.
Right.
If they're not based in Iceland or somewhere with free energy, they're losing money at the moment.
Those who wanted to close down have basically shifted to the remittance service of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
So they pivoted, as they say in these days.
Plus, with these private blockchains that the banks want to run, is again, it's not a distributed open ledger. So, like, you could detect fraud on an open ledger. You can't cheat the system on an open ledger. And this is what people are attracted to Bitcoin and its blockchain for. Now, the banks want to say, "Here, trust us." Remember, it's not a trustless system like Bitcoin and the blockchain. It's just trust us.
Yeah.
We've proven ourselves in the past to be bad actors, most people would say. Mm-hmm. But they're saying trust us because, I mean, the only reason to trust them is that the government might step in and bail their bad crimes and decisions out.
Well, I thought it's remarkable that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago we identified the single most evil character in the entire global banking system, Blythe Masters, who is over at J.P. Morgan, who invented the credit default swap as a way to allow ExxonMobil to escape financial penalty after the Exxon Valdez catastrophe. And then she got caught up in a massive market rigging scandal. And the next thing you know, she's popped up in a cryptocurrency shop in London. So the banks essentially hired their number one financial assassin, Blythe, to go to work and try to figure out if this is a threat. Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan, of course, said that, Bitcoin is trying to eat our lunch. So he recognized that potentially this could be a competitive threat to him. So he put out his top hit woman, Blythe, And she's been, you know, featured in Bloomberg as the poster child for blockchain technology now. And they put out this meme that it's all about the blockchain, not about the Bitcoin. And, you know, the propaganda wars are in full swing. I think this is where the Kaiser Report is instrumental in countering the organized propaganda from the banking-owned media outlets like the BBC is the worst by far, followed by CNN and ABC and Fox News and all these other, you know, mom-and-pop shops that are controlled by banking terrorists. And so we put out the counter story to give folks a fighting chance at making an informed decision. You know, I think that's what we try to do, is allow people to make an informed decision. You know, we're not trying to claim monopolization of the truth. We're just saying, here's another view. But so Blythe is, I guess my point is that I was surprised that they reinvented Blythe Masters as a blockchain dominatrix. But there she is.
Well, Blythe also, she was heading the commodities desk at JP Morgan, and that's how her name came into our lives. Well, we were talking about derivatives first, and we talked to her, about her. You notice she follows us, and then we were talking about silver.
Everyone follows us.
And then we were talking about silver, and then she suddenly was head of the JP Morgan commodities desk and dealing with all the silver. But there's silver's back in the news. I don't know if you saw what's gone on. Reuters yesterday reported basically that silver coin demand has gone absolutely berserk, like out of control in the past 6 months. And because of that, production of silver coins can't keep up with demand in the U.S. And then it was, so all these Americans were then grabbing Austrian and Australian and Swiss coins, anything they could get their hand in on, causing ripple throughout the world, including increased premiums. But they say the U.S. Mint began setting weekly sales quotas for its flagship American Eagle silver coins in July because it can't meet demand. And the Canadian Mint followed suit after record monthly sales in July. In Australia, the Perth Mint sold a record of more than 2.5 million ounces of silver this month, nearly four times more than in August. So they're talking about September. And has begun rationing supply of new lines of coins this month, a Mint official said. Quote, silver coin demand is absolutely through the roof, said Neil Vance, wholesale manager at the Perth Mint. There seems to be a bit of a frenzy, as people think there is a shortage of silver, but in fact, it is a crunch in the manufacturing capacity. Also in the U.S. Mint in West Point, New York, where the American Eagle is made, the plant is operating three shifts and paying staff overtime. And the Austrian Mint, which has begun allocating sales of its Philharmonic silver coins, has increased production of silver blanks after higher than expected demand in July. In 35 years of dealing precious metals, Roy Friedman, vice president of sales and trading at Manfra, says he's never seen anything like this. And what do you think? This has gone on quietly behind the scenes.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about the failure of economics in our modern era, that it's no longer about a meritocracy and capitalism is about being close to the actual supply of the fake money at the banks, and that makes no sense. But okay, here's another law of economics that's being completely destroyed. Now, if the demand is high, we are taught that price goes higher. If the supply, if there's a huge increase in supply, we are taught that price goes down. So let's look at two different things, silver and treasury bonds. So here you have the demand for silver has never been higher. In the history of the world, it's never been higher. Everyone around the world is buying silver. And as you are reporting, there are shortages, there are bottlenecks, there are manufacturing bottlenecks. And what's happened to the price? It's gone down. Now let's look at treasury bonds. Never in the history of the world have governments issued more treasury bonds. The U.S. has a $17 trillion debt officially as part of a $50 to $60 trillion debt unofficially. There's $200 trillion of debt in the world. It's never been this high ever in the history of the world. That means there's hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of bonds that are being created to support this pyramid of debt. And yet, what happens to the price of bonds in the last 10 years? They've gone up. So here you have the record issuance of paper and the price goes up, and you have a record demand for metal and the price goes down. So therefore, we've entered into a Bermuda Triangle of economics Were there all, any law that you would have thought governed economic? How is this possible? Because you've got a command and control, Politburo of central bankers who, like the Soviet Union days, think they know better than the market. They can set the price of money, not the market.
Well, they also note all the paper silver. So ETFs, people were buying paper silver, and then they sold it en masse. So there's big sellers of paper silver.
But that paper silver is governed by this command and control Politburo of central bankers that are selling 50 times the paper silver for every ounce that's actually to buy in the market. That's the mechanics of how the destruction of economics works. It's not because there were aliens that showed up in a spacecraft and waved a magic wand and suddenly the polarity of all we know and the substance and the mathematical basis has been usurped by laws governed from a parallel universe. No, that didn't happen. What happened was there was a coordinated collusion and fraud. And the result, the symptom, is a collapse in what we know about economics. The cause is collusion and corruption. And now, unfortunately for them, because 2 + 2 = 4, and because gravity exists, they, like every paper currency that's ever been created over the past 300 years, they all go to zero. And once again, the dollar, the pound, the yen, the euro especially, will join the more than 300 paper currencies that have been created over the past few hundred years in the paper currency graveyard. And the tombstone, of course, will be made of something solid like rock or bronze or copper or gold or silver. And that will be there for thousands of years. You know, the king Tutankhamun is long gone. But the gold coins are still there, and they're still digging for them.
Well, that's right. You know, we're staying in Amsterdam at a place right below us is a cafe called SLA, Silver Liberation Army.
That's a
slot. Actually, what does slav mean here?
Salad.
Oh, salad. Not as romantic as our Silver Liberation Army theme. Do you have any silver?
Yeah, I have silver. I do.
Paper or physical?
Physical silver. I have kilo coins. I have ounce coins. I have bars.
Are they upstairs in your apartment?
Yes,
okay, let's go check it out.
Let's go check them out. Are we near the end there, honey bunny?
Well, we have 1 minute left, and I want to say that was the truth about markets. We were talking quite interestingly about basically trustless currencies like Bitcoin and the blockchain that you don't need to trust anybody because it's just honest, open ledger. And silver, of course, is part of honest money. There's no counterparty risk to it. So it was a good theme to the show, I think.
Oh, really? And, good. I'm really happy.
And I'd like to thank our guest, Matt Harms of Start Chat. You can follow him on Twitter at @start_chat. And thank you for joining us in Amsterdam via London. And that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets. Thanks, thanks, Matt.
Thank you so much, Max and Stacey.
And thank you, Max Kaiser.
Thanks. Bye, y'all.